Yeah, I hope you can feel it. Huh, man, I feel like I just got punched in the face. And don't tell me I look like it either. It is Monday, the second day of June, 2025. It feels like outside, it feels like somewhere between fall and early spring. You know, what's with the weather? Everyone complains about it. Nobody does anything about it. Oh, wait a second. Am I wrong there? Yeah, we got people trying to do stuff about it, right? And not in a good way. Oh, man. I'll tell you what, a lot of stuff going on. I hope everyone had a great weekend. I have a great show lined up for you. None other than John Moore, thelibertyman.com is with me to keep me in line, to teach me stuff, teach us stuff, talk about us, or talk to us about things, I should say. So great to have him with us. I'm telling you, before I get to John, I just want to mention this. For the people in the chat, I put in there, and I wrote an article for Wisconsin Christian News, released it to our supporters last night. This, of course, it became a complimentary article for on Wisconsin Christian News. The link is in the chat. It'll be in the program show notes. HagmanPI.com. Go there and seriously, go there and read it. And I'll tell you why this is important. That was a heavy sigh, by the way. Intentional heavy sigh. I'll tell you why this is important. Because Revolver said breaking. FBI closing in on suspects in J6 pipe bomb. Folks, look. J6, just like J13, let's call that J13 and keep calling it J13, Butler, was an inside job. We know that. The J6, every aspect of J6 was an inside job. Every aspect of July 13, Butler, Pennsylvania, inside job. But let's, oh, and there is an explosive connection between January 6th and July 13th. And, you know, the multi-talented, multi-experienced John Moore has experience in a lot of things. And of course, he's former military and homicide detective, investigator like myself. I mean, we have a lot in common, except for military. I was never in the military. Sadly, I probably should have been. But I remember you remember that, folks. Those old enough, the watching the birthday show up on the on television for the draft. Anyway, but here's the bottom line, and John can probably weigh in on this. And it's ordinary explosives. Ordinary explosives. That's kind of a weird thing to say. There are markers in explosives, like explosive compounds. For example, I'm just going to use this as an example, C4. Well, C4 now contains markers. So you can trace it back to its really where it was manufactured. Okay. And you can trace it back. It's, I think, since 1984. It's had markers in it. Previous to 1984, that's the good stuff from, I think it's from Yugoslavia. No markers in Semtex. Thank you. That's a correct. Yes, correct. So just like the drugs of today, the CIA puts genetic markers into the compounds that make certain drugs. And why do they do that? Because they want to make sure it's their drugs that make it into the U.S. as opposed to the competition's. So if they're supporting, for example, the Sinaloa cartel, they're genetically marking or putting the markers into the components for the heroin, the coke, whatever it might be, and giving it to the and as an example, Sinaloa cartel. But if another cartel's drugs show up in Center City, Los Angeles, well, then they can go after and beat the crap out of those people because they're stepping on their turf. Kind of similar with the explosives, if you understand this. And So anyway, so just to kind of close this up here and then bring John in fully on here. It's my belief based, and I don't have any 100%. I don't have a source that says, is telling me this is the absolute truth. I've gotten hints by certain people kind of in the know that they are, they've known who this person that planted, so-called planted the, or let me back up, allegedly planted the pipe bombs. And there's a lot of play with the phrase viable bombs. Okay. There's a lot of play in that because if, for example, a bomb is considered viable, if only the kitchen timer attached to it, which maybe is attached to nothing, is operable, then it's a viable bomb. Okay. Seriously. So they're playing games with, playing a lot of word games. But the bottom line is this. It was an inside job. And yes, I believe, and again, this is not based on anything 100 or attached to the FBI or any of that. I believe that the this whole thing was a construct of the FBI, the Capitol Police, and the Secret Service. And this story, if you understand why, or if you understand that Kamala Harris was not at the Capitol on January 6th when all the stuff went down, she was at the DNC. And, you know, supposedly 25 feet from where she entered was a friggin' pipe bomb. And you're buying all that crap. Well, tune back into CNN. All right. With that, John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com, has a show every Monday through Friday. And I'll tell you what, listen to it, 3-hour show. And his shows are fantastic. Go to thelibertyman.com, drill down on the shows for the archives. Listen to today's show too. If we bore you or if I bore you, well, just tune there. He won't bore you. John, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic, Doug. Good to be with you.
Good to have you.
Yes. Well, since you brought up the DC pipe bombs on that date, that's January 6th. I should mention for people, Dan Bongino did extensive reporting, maybe the best reporting of anybody, on that particular matter. Now he just happens to be the second in command of the FBI, and he's actually to do something about it, isn't he?
Yeah, and see, I mean, he knew. I guarantee you, he knew the identity of the pipe bomber. Maybe not to the extent he does now in the operational layout of what happened on J6, but he knew the identity. He knew that person was connected to the DNC, but more importantly, to Capitol Police, to the FBI, was an operative. He knew when he was a talk show host because he had people feeding him stuff.
Exactly.
So, yes. So he knows now. Patel, I'm sure, knows. Now, this is strictly about January 6th pipe bomb. The other stuff, you know, I guess some issues, but I'm an impatient man. So, but I'll put that aside. So, John, continue. Yes, I didn't mean to drag that out.
Well, that's okay. But before I leave that topic, Dan Bongino and Kash Patel being where they are, along with the other cabinet members, is something I never expected to see, quite frankly. President Trump has said to make or not make certain cabinet appointments. He knows now in hindsight that was a mistake, and he's learned from his mistakes. And I don't, you and I discussed this, but I don't know President Trump. I met some of his people, but I don't know President Trump, but I have known men and occasionally women with a similar persona as to how they deal with things. And it's very difficult for a man like President Trump to admit that he's wrong, part of his persona. But he has done it, and in this particular case, I'm glad that he did. And I have every reason to believe that the combination of Dan Bongino and Kash Patel will yield results when it comes to bombs on the 6th day of January, 2020. I want to do a segue here to a documentary. I watched two-thirds. Earlier, it has a one-word title, It's one word title is anecdotals. I left the S off when I was first doing a search, but it does have an S on it, anecdotals. It's a documentary regarding the vaccine injured people. Very well done. Excellent video footage. A great heads up to the true nature of what we're dealing with here. Things that I hadn't thought about for a while. It's the vaccine was introduced in January 2020. And we've been dealing with this now for, this is year number six. It's a game changer in terms of what it's done to our population, what's done to our society, what's done to business all over the country. And since we always have to do, I've interviewed the men and women at the three, we have three funeral homes in my county, Crawford County, Missouri. All of them agree that there's been not quite a doubling of funerals beginning about March of 2020. One of my correspondents, he's a deputy sheriff in Mississippi. He's interviewed the funeral home people in his county. The same, twice as many funerals beginning the spring of 2020. Now, this, I'm rather amazed that both the mainstream media as well as the alternative media, which you and I are part of, is barely addressing this matter. We have doubling of people dying, and it's like it's not even happening, Doug. How is that possible? I don't know. It's a rhetorical but that is, in fact, what's happening, and the documentation proves that. Going back to, let's see, the insurance industry executive in Indianapolis, it'll be 3 years ago this fall, I believe, he was at a conference and said that they've seen in the life insurance industry a 20% increase in what's called all-cause mortality, which has never, ever happened since they've kept records, ever. We need to keep it, I think this is in the front of our brains, through right now, the worst crime in human history. I spent most of my adult life investigating crimes. You've done the same thing, Doug. And I know if I approach my local prosecutor, just throw up his hands in frustration. What could he do? Right down the street from him, it's about a two-minute walk from his office, the county prosecuting attorney, the county health department, about one-third of a block away. And they're doing what they're mandated to do by the state health department, which is to give these lethal injections to people. And that's happening. You know, we've got more than 3,300 counties in the United States. As far as I know, all of them are still giving the vaccines in one way or another. I think some states have backed off. We now have Bobby Kennedy Jr. and his people saying no more vaccines for children under 18 or pregnant women. But here's my belief in that regard. There's a lot of moving pieces in this, Doug, and I believe that one of the goals of the Trump administration is not to cause outright panic. So in order to outright panic, they're going to take off the vaccines. The first step was no pregnant women, no children under 18. I think the next step will be people under age 60, no vaccines. And then finally and last, no vaccines for people 60 and over. In order to spread out the fear, spread out the concern, so we don't have people riding in the streets, Doug. Do you think that might be a viable idea?
Yes. You know, how to handle that in look, we're all adults, hopefully, listening and watching this. How to handle that properly? I'm a big believer, however, in just, you know, if I've got to deliver bad news to somebody, I'm just going to deliver the bad news. Okay. I'm right. Not going to try to sugarcoat it. I'm right. Not going to, you know, stroke them. And there's not going to be a whole lot of, and I hate when people do this. I really do. Sit down for me. I got some bad news. Sit down. Well, just tell me the friggin' bad news. Okay.
Right.
Don't do this because it may not be that bad. Or if it's that bad, I want to know right now. So I get the fact that, Yeah. However, that said, you're dealing with a mass of people. A lot of those people.
Look at the healthcare. I'm going to interrupt you here, Doug.
Please go on.
Let's look at the healthcare professionals, the ones who, the nurses, the doctors, both healthcare professionals who gave the injections. Now, every one of these healthcare professionals, they get a case delivered to them of COVID-19 vaccinations. The little glass vials are inside little cardboard boxes, and inside each little cardboard box is what's called the package insert, a 2x2 foot piece of paper that's supposed to say the ingredients in the vaccine, how to properly administer the vaccine, who's supposed to get it, what the possible side effects are, and what the good effects are. So we have hundreds of thousands of healthcare professionals giving these injections, opening up these little boxes and pulling out a 2x2 foot piece of blank paper. It says right in the middle of it, intentionally left blank. These health professionals, where they've been a nurse for a year or a doctor for 40 or 50 years, have ever seen insert 2x2 foot piece of paper that says in the middle of it, intentionally left blank.
Yeah.
Now, there's a term called blind faith. And if there was ever a time to use that term, this would have been it. When a healthcare professional pull out that 2x2 foot piece of paper that says in the middle of it, intentionally left blank, they look at it and they have blind faith that, oh, well, Pfizer and Moderna must have a good reason for leaving this blank. Oh, the CDC must have a good reason for this. And they do give the injections anyway. Totally ignoring the Nuremberg Code, which says specifically give somebody any medication or medical procedure first. Now, how can you give informed consent when the 2x2 foot piece of paper is blank? You see, it's not possible to do that, is it?
No. And John, we may have to ask you to reconnect. I don't want to miss a word that you're saying. People in the chat, let me know if you are getting a little bit of missing several words at a time from John. But you know, look, we've known about that for a long time. And the rationale, or the people who attempt to rationalize what that is or why that happened, are the very same people today are maintaining, you know, maintaining that story of everything is fine, it's all safe, and it's overblown, and the anecdotal evidence, that you referenced, or the anecdotals in that particular
the documentary,
yeah, right. The documentary, right? It's a stretch. So I'm convinced, really, that there are so many people that even today you can talk to and toss, and I've met people like this, and you have too. You can show people evidence, especially when it comes to people that they trust or family members. Hey, look, here's a video of your family member stealing that $2,000 purse or whatever it might be. Oh, no. There must be something. No, that's not. They're going to rationalize that living crap out of it, right? They're going to say, oh, it's not him, or it's not her, it's not whatever.
That reminds me of when Michael Brown was shot to death, Ferguson, video made earlier the same day of him using arm tactics to steal cigars. And people said, oh, that video was made up. It wasn't real.
Yeah, made up, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. See, and you know, again, forever we knew that, like, about the blank paper for a long time. But it's that's a perfect example of many people in our society today, where they look at a blank paper and have blind faith in a blank piece of paper. I'm telling you, it's just, you know. Yeah.
What is the rationale that people that support this say for the 2 foot piece of paper being blank?
What is the rationale? Well, you know,
if you can recall.
I think it had to do with, well, this was, you know, this was rushed, and there was no good rationale, no legitimate rationale, no logical rationale. And even these dweebs who stand on the pedestal, wear the white coat, pretend they're doctors, dispensing, counting little pills, okay, and think they're small g gods, okay, lecturing you on how to take your anti or your blood pressure medication or whatever the case might be, stick it in your ear. I mean, don't lecture me on anything, you little dweeb. But they're the first out with that. But anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
Well, it's. I was hoping and praying that Bobby Kennedy would once again part of the Trump administration, as I was with Michael Flynn. I think, and maybe doing more. Quite frankly, I was hoping that President pardon Michael Flynn, that he would. I was hoping he would pardon him while Trump was still in office, is what should have happened.
Exactly.
And put him back into the national security position. That would have been a real kick in the teeth for the what I call the socialist, communist, Democrats, Muslims. But I've met Michael Flynn. I've talked to him one on one for a few minutes. He's the real deal, a real alpha male warrior, as well you might think he is. But let's do a segue to something you mentioned before the show here. 1968. I was 20 years old in Vietnam for the of 1968. I recall when King was assassinated, my black brothers were just visibly and very down and upset with that taking place. And there was nothing us white guys could say to them to make them feel any better. They just kept quiet. When Bobby Kennedy was assassinated the same year, it didn't have the same effect on us white guys as it did on the King's assassination on the black guys. But still, it looked like our country was falling apart. And, of course, we had riots in major cities all during the summer of 1968. And it was a sight to behold. Of course, while I was there, Adrian Cronauer, the movie was made, Good Morning Vietnam, about his time in Vietnam on radio. I got to listen to him every morning. And as an observer from 12 times, it looked like the military was literally falling apart. Many books have been written.
Hang on a second. John, Eric the Tech, can you pop in here? What do we need to do here to fix the freezing? I'm getting reports that we're freezing, we're skipping. All right.
Okay. Well, I'll disconnect and reconnect then.
Okay, that's good. Meanwhile, I'll just hum a couple of stuff from John's right. I mean, can you imagine being a half a world away and watching your country? First of all, you're in a very unpopular war, and I get it. But you're half a world away and watching this. Okay, John. Yeah, continue. I hope it works. Yeah, go ahead.
Born adults that we had communications. I recall. That when news networks would shoot some and have that on a plane headed to the United States within minutes. Like communications was basically non-existent. Of course, the internet was just something that was taking place in the experimental stages. But we did have radio. We had newspapers, magazines, and wasn't instant communication, but it was communication to know what was going on. I had subscriptions to two major newspapers at the time. I had access to the library. Of course, being in military intelligence, I was at the classified briefing Monday through Friday to know what was going on. And it was what we knew, what I knew in military, compartmentalized. It wasn't until years later that I found out that the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was the basis for the Gulf of Tonkin, never happened. And the Secretary of Defense admitted so in his biography. So the whole war was based on a lie. Vietnamese patrol boats never attacked the United States Navy. That never happened. But it was promoted as being real, and the United States House of Representatives, the United States Senate was lied to. I don't know if I doubt that Lyndon Johnson was lied to. He probably knew the real deal. But we have 55,000 names on a black granite wall in Washington, D.C., for a war based on a lie. And that's something to be at least occasionally, don't you think?
Johnson, to me, was perhaps one of the worst presidents, even above Biden. Biden wasn't really there, that vegetable brain. Now, the people like Anita Dunn and Jill Biden, Hunter, the people around him running the White House, and of course, I could name a bunch of names, but you get the idea. So, yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you in your assessment of things. And when you look back, you know, it's interesting how things.
Well, Robert McNamara, Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War, wanted to set the record straight to have his history books be accurate, and that's why he said in his article. But the Gulf of Tonkin incident never happened.
Yeah.
Of course, when my mother was an adult during World War II, my father served in the South Pacific, and trying to tell my mother that Franklin Roosevelt, the attack on Pearl Harbor before it happened, into Iraq.
Yeah.
You know, and most people who were adults during World War II would have the same attitude. Oh, that can't possibly be true. Oh, you're making it up. No, that's a lie. But it's the truth. Franklin Roosevelt knew about Pearl Harbor before it happened.
He facilitated it, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he facilitated making it worse.
Well, true. Okay, yeah.
President Kennedy's father at the time was the ambassador to England. President Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, was given a message from Winston Churchill. The Brits were able to intercept and code all the encoded from the Japanese and the Germans all during. So they intercepted the message giving the date and the time of the attack on Pearl Harbor. That was hand carried by Mr. Kennedy to Franklin Roosevelt, and Roosevelt knew the exact date. Roosevelt did was, of course, Roosevelt was the Secretary of the Navy during World War I. He knew about naval power. He moved out the modern ships we needed to win World War II. He moved them out of harm's way, leaving behind the antiquated ships they didn't need to win World War II with. They had the radar turned off just a few minutes before the attack began at Pearl Harbor. The aircraft to be up the Japanese Zero fighters were parked in circles with the engines facing inward. In case you don't know, people, airplanes can't go backwards. They can only go forwards. When it went under, so that was a minute delay to move these, and so they could meet the Japanese incoming fighters. And yes,
wow, yeah.
Roosevelt and Admiral in charge of the Navy and Pearl Harbor requested a court-martial. And why would he do that? Well, for the following reason. He would have the power of subpoena, which you and I used hundreds of times, Doug. Subpoenas are wonderful. And the Admiral from Pearl Harbor could have subpoenaed the necessary documentation Roosevelt knew before the attack. And, of course, he was denied that. He was denied the court-martial.
So now that was on a however, that you're talking about a military venue for that action, though, right? You're not talking about the Title III court.
No, it'd be a military court martial.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we've been lied to forever, you know, and bringing that forth to today. We're being lied to all of the time, even today. And you know, the people who are lying to us, it's my belief that they're out for it's all or nothing for them at this point. They're so desperate to keep the lies going, keep the power structure the way they want it. And I think it's demonically driven.
Well, funny you should mention that.
Okay. Well, good.
I've been aware of Catherine Austin Fitz for a number of years. You have, but she said recently that her and her team at the very top of who controls this planet are entities that are demonic. Paraphrase was. Let's see, the guy who does the reports on the economy, the guy from the Bronx, you know who I'm talking about.
Joey Maria, or no?
No, the gentleman.
Not Salenti.
Gerald Salenti.
From Mount Kisco. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, he's basically saying the same thing, that there's demonic entities in charge at the very top. Now, you and I have heard these things from various people for decades. I have, you have, most of our audience have. But once again, I've said this previously, she was a pretty high-level member of the Bush administration, which gives her credibility that people like Alex Jones and you don't have, doesn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. Catherine Austin Fitz is a national treasure, I believe. And
I agree.
Yeah.
Brilliant woman. Brilliant. And who, yep. She's connected to brilliant people. She doesn't work in a vacuum. She has a team of men and women she works with to research and come to the conclusions she comes to. She's not a vacuum. And I have a lot of respect for the woman.
I do too. You know, people have asked to get her on, and I might just do that. So try to anyway. I know that she's much in demand, but we should, you know what, we should have a three-way conversation. I want to be very, very careful how I said that with Catherine, because I think that would be just a tremendous make for a tremendous show. But John, let me ask you a question, because I'm getting hammered here. This weekend we saw some maneuvering. Well, we saw some downright nasty attacks by Ukraine into Russia. Alex Jones has been talking about this. I think we need to, if you don't mind that, we need to spend some time on this. You can't tell me. I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to ask you, but I believe that the Western powers facilitated this program since day one. I'm talking about the Newlands, Victoria Newlands of the West, crafted a plan to attack Russia the way they did, Ukraine to attack Russia the way they did with the drones. What's your gut? What's your intel? What are you feeling? What are you hearing about the attacks?
Well, it surprised me that they were that successful. These drones are changing the whole nature of modern warfare. They really are. What they're capable of doing, how they're very difficult to stop. When you got an unmanned aircraft, you closer to the ground than a pilot would ever do. I don't have a pilot's license, but I have about 20 hours in my logbook officially, and about twice that unofficially. I know for a fact that it's really, really dangerous to fly close to the ground.
Well, except when you're aiming for the Pentagon
That was an unmanned craft.
Yeah. But wait. You know,
missiles are unmanned typically, as far as I know.
But these
they can fly nap of the earth. Now we have there's ways now that aircraft can be flown pretty close to the ground called nap of the earth flying. But even they have a cushion of safety that a drone doesn't need, because there's no human being in thing. So when you fly a nap of the earth as close to ground as these drones are, it's probably damn near impossible to detect them until they're almost where they got where they want to be for their mission. So I don't know how inland into the Russian territory were these bombers. I don't have a clue. Do you have no offhand?
Well, the territory is plural, and man, I've heard pretty far in.
100 miles, 200, 300?
A couple of hundred miles anyway.
Okay.
So anyone in the chat want to give us like a...
Well, point being, if they had Moscow, I think these new drones they're getting or missiles have the ability to reach Moscow, and they're not going to... The Moscow, the general staff, Politburo, the Russian military, they're not going to tolerate Moscow being hit by these kind of weapons. They're simply not going to do it. And they have weapons almost equal to atomic, these thermal bombs, which are fuel-air bombs, that are just about as destructive as nuclear weapons. They've been holding back using them. I think they've used them some, but not much. I think if Ukraine does very much more striking, especially the capital of Moscow, I think they'll be held to pay, and Russia will let loose both barrels with thermal barrels that have incredibly destructive force. But there's another aspect to this, and that's the use of nuclear weapons at all. There's a belief, and I support this, that there's entities that will not allow nuclear weapons to be used again on this planet, as much as they have in their inventories. I think there's entities in control of nuclear weapons to be used anymore, because they ruin the planet for everybody. That's just my belief. I might be wrong, but I think there's some evidence to support that.
Yes. I don't need to really expand on that, but I should clarify one thing: the nature of this latest attack, to be precise, the attacks occurred or were launched from trucks that made inroads into Russia. We're talking anywhere between 1,000 to 3,000 miles, based on what I'm hearing, 4,000 even, which I'm not sure how far, what the furthest point is, but of course the infiltration of trucks, and then the, even more importantly than that, if there is such a thing, the exfiltration, to me, which by the way is a lot more difficult when you look at the plans and schemes of these people, the exfiltration of the actors responsible for the attack tells me that there was a lot of Western intelligence in addition to the military that were involved in this. So anyway, and General Flynn was on with Alex Jones and Eric the Tech. If there is a segment, if I didn't look yet, but if that was segmented, where, you know, we could play like a minute or two of that, if you happen to find it, then let me know. But anyway, John, you said before the show, Russia is not going to put up with this. I mean, Russia is being pushed pretty far. And one more thing, and then I'm going to turn it all over to you again. I believe that President Trump, those were on President Trump and even Pete Hegseth, but if this was an intel operation, John, I believe that this was largely hidden or misrepresented to President Trump, because I don't think he would have signed off on any of this. And I think he's pretty pissed off right now. That's just my yeah, I'm not making excuses for him at all.
Well, the Ukrainian military, I don't believe, has capabilities of their own to detect anything that far into Russia. Rely on satellite imaging and imaging coming from U.S. Spy aircraft and so forth. I'm pretty sure that Ukraine does not have that kind of capability on their own. So they probably get a, most likely they get a daily briefing what's going on with Russia or from the U.S. Military, maybe other sources. They don't necessarily tell us or anybody else what they intend to do with it. So I think it's very likely that Turek turned over this intel to the Ukrainians, and they went ahead and acted on their own without notifying the United States military or any NATO countries what they intend to do with these drones. That's my belief.
But don't you, okay, but don't you think an attack of this nature would need Western support? I mean, even with, let's say, even with Starlink.
I believe some missiles have to just put in coordinates, latitude, and they go on their own. Others may need satellite directing. I don't know what technology they have at hand.
Yeah.
To do that, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I'm not a military. Look, I don't have the experience. I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to matters of military with respect to military.
Well, it's something I have half a century ago, but John Moore personally gave the U.S. Air Force directions on where to play our loudspeaker tapes or the jump or drop our leaflets, and I would plot them on a map, giving 4 10-digit grid coordinates to make a box for them to fly back and forth, playing our loudspeakers and dropping leaflets. And that was turned over to the Air Force. The aircraft had a navigator who could put them on a map and then direct the pilot and co-pilot to fly to, given those 10-digit grid coordinates.
You know, you have a hell of a storied past.
I'll tell you, and the military didn't know about it, and here's what it was. As I mentioned a moment ago, I attended the briefing at 4th Corps headquarters in Mekong Delta Monday through Friday, and I would find out where there were sightings of Caucasians these villages with a Viet Cong. Obviously, they were American prisoners. The likelihood of them being Russians that far south was almost non-existent. So I had discretion as to where aircraft to go. I would direct the aircraft to fly over the last known location of the American POWs so that they would be aircraft and maybe signal them. And then I would actually fly myself. I flew 57 missions, so I knew when I was flying over certain areas, because I had plotted the mission myself, to be looking for a mirror or waving of a white fabric or something to let me know that the POW was signaling me. And that's what I did personally, looking for POWs.
Man. How many, I got to ask you this. You had to be responsible for saving quite a few of our men. I believe that.
I don't know that I was.
I get that, but don't undersell your efforts. Before we go on, Eric the Tech, thank you for putting that up. Top general warns Ukraine massive drone attack deep inside Russia lays bare U.S. vulnerability to fifth generational warfare. And this is important, folks, obviously, to the listeners, not the viewers. The former head of the DIA, General Michael Flynn, who obviously John has met, and of course, I've got a lot of respect for him as well as John does, reports that Communist China and other foreign adversaries are known to have armies of sleeper cells now. And John, real quick, think about what's happening now. And think about what happened in Kabul, okay, with the Bagram Air Force Base and our withdrawal on that. But by the way, the CHICOM sleeper cells is something that John has talked about, along with the Islamic sleeper cells. I've talked about it. John, let me ask you a question. That is a video. Do you want to play like a minute of that or no? What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
all right, because John and I are in on this together tonight. So, okay. So Eric, if you want to play like a minute of that, Let's do that, because I didn't see this myself, so we're all going to see this for the first time. So if you can bring that back up and play that, or is it, we okay with that, Eric? Is that fine?
What you okay, had in the last 48 hours, let's say, what appears to be a long-term plan to destroy a component of the Russian triad using a very interesting technique with these trailers mounted on the backs of trucks, driven up to the sites of the airfields. All this could happen right here in the United States of America so easily, and they don't have to drive across our borders. Many of it's right here. So I just want to add that as a sidebar to what just happened in Russia. There is a massive, massive threat to our homeland, and it's not on the borders. It's not on the Canadian or the Mexican border. It's right here at home. I want to know where every single one of the, which we know of, at least 300,000 Chinese illegals that came into this country during the Biden administration. I want to know if we have habeas gravis on them. I want to know if we know where they're at. Where could these guys likely be? I mean, there's some things that have to happen right here in the homeland to begin to prepare. Again, I don't want to be hyperbolic, and I don't want to get emotional. What I want to be is I want to be very matter of fact. But we've got to operate. We've got to operate now as though we don't have, like, time is not on our side, right? Time is now our enemy. And if we don't have really good responses and we demonstrate a level of readiness, right? A level of readiness, not just comments, not sending out these special envoys, but, you know, really getting this correct.
Okay, you can cut that. That gives you a taste of that. We'll put that in the show notes. Thank you, Eric the Tech. But John, I mean, we have to think about that as well. What the threat here at home that you've talked about, the infiltration here.
I've talked about this dozens of times, and I will continue to. Well, the starting point is to look at what the goal of the Communist Chinese is. And I'll start with saying what they don't want. What they don't want is a nuclear wasteland of the lower 48. That's not their goal. Their goal is to conquer lower 48 and have it become new China and have it populated by about 250,000 or so or more Chinese with no Americans being. That's the goal, with minimal permanent damage to infrastructure. Now, EMP may or may not play a role in what. There's different versions of EMP weapons. There are EMP weapons that can knock out, say, 10 city blocks, knock out a region, or knock out half the country. The use of EMP weapons becomes a lot more viable if you just happen to have the biggest factories on the planet making the electronics that will be destroyed, and hundreds of thousands of technicians qualified to replace and repair those pieces of equipment. So my belief is that I don't want to EMP too much, but EMP would probably be used as a localized weapon, the major military bases, maybe knock out the big cities, and that would be about it. What that is,
yes,
the airports, the locks and dams on the rivers. They don't want to permanently knock out the power running facilities we have, especially nuclear. I don't want to ruin those or cause them to blow up and cause damage with the nuclear waste. So having these commandos now, 300,000 is a massive army. If I was planning, I would need that many trained, equipped commandos with a chain of command that were highly motivated to do it. More or less than that. When I say do it, I mean bring this country to be shut down overnight with trained teams of commandos that have the training, the equipment, the communication to do that. Even if it's only one third or one, that's still a massive army of commandos.
Massive.
Massive, indeed. And they're not alone. We have commandos from the Middle East. Commandos from South America. We have Russian commandos called Spetsnaz. It's unknown how many, at least unknown to me, what the true numbers are. I've been told that's a group, typically 10 or so men, In every county in the United States, there's more than 3,300 counties. Every county has their own contingent of Russian Spetsnaz. And I've personally been to two of these locations. I've mentioned many times. One in Texas County, Bado, B-A-D-O, Missouri, which just happens to be about 20 miles south of the South Gate of a very large military base. That would be Fort Leonard, Missouri. And the other near outside its city limits, where they're pretending to be a movie production company, of all things, which just happens to be a great owning and shooting and training with automatic weapons as much as you want. What a great cover.
You know, I remember, and I published this in 2005, I remember spending an entire summer performing surveillance in Western New York. Well, I'm sorry, not Western New York. Well, I did that too, but also at the Catskills, at the base of the Catskills, on a paramilitary training compound. And we generated hours upon hours upon hours of video that the FBI took from us. All right, we were preparing to copy it and then offer them the original, right, you know, through a proper chain of custody.
Right, right.
Never got the chance. They took it from us. Okay, so
that sounds like them guys. Yeah.
Now, however, we did save some of the still images, I believe, from the video. And it was only by chance that we were able to manage that. But the bottom line is this. We showed paramilitary training at Jamaat al-Fukra under Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jilani, who, by the way, issued a fatwa, which still stands against me. My car blew up shortly thereafter. It was just, you know, the cops looked at my car when it was still smoking and said, "You got any enemies?" I said, "You know, yeah, pick up a phone book and take your pick." And he was thinking, like, you know, "Do you have an ex-wife that's pissed off at you or something?" Or, you know, but anyway, bottom line was, what got me at that time, still green behind the ears, thinking, "Oh man, you know, doing a hell of a great job for the service of our country."
Right.
Only to find out that we insulted the great Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jilani out of Pakistan, who, by the way, was the person who Daniel Pearl was on the way to interview when he just happened to lose his head.
Right.
You know, but here's the kicker. The kicker is this. The following week, the FBI were featured at a luncheon at the very encampment where the FBI out of New York, where there was paramilitary training going on. And of course they hid the weapons underground and all this. We found the tunnel. We found the where the weapons were. We had all of the evidence, had it confiscated, and nothing was done about it back in 2005. And it pisses me off to this day. So,
okay. Anyway. The FBI was a guest for some kind of dinner at the Muslim compound.
Yeah, it was a luncheon. I don't want to overstate. It wasn't a dinner. So it was kind of a luncheon. And there are photographs. In fact, I have them on a hard drive. I'm going to publish the things because, yeah, it pissed me off because the very same FBI that we turned this over to, that they confiscated, the very same FBI were saying, well, in the interest of U.S. and Islamic relations, we're going to just join together and break bread. And you know, what a crock of crap, and it pisses me off. I have the evidence. I've got the receipts. Well, I had them, but in terms of some of the stills, I've got them. And you know what gets me, too, is at the end of our surveillance, because we did ultimately get, you can't do surveillance. I mean, it was like 5 months. And, of course, at... After 5 months of surveillance, covert. We did. Somebody caught us. Okay. And I was surprised we were able to do it for 5 months. Folks, John, you know. So you know every day in the surveillance operation.
That's when you run.
Well, you know what? We looked at my partner and I. We looked up and there's a guy. Well, two guys actually, standing with AK-47s pointed at us. I'm thinking, shit, this ain't good. This is not. I mean, we're not having a good day. Here's the big thing about it. They actually called the sheriff. And the sheriff came and said, you know, you guys are trespassing. And I'm saying, wait a second. You see what's going on here, right? You know, it doesn't matter. You guys are trespassing.
Did the jihadists hold you at gunpoint for the sheriff to show up?
Yes, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And you were glad when he did, right?
I thought I was going to be glad, but then I realized, wait a second. The sheriff's talking about arresting us for trespassing when these guys are walking around with AK friggin' 47s and there are graves in the back. Seriously, graves in the back of this encampment. Oh, and this encampment just happens to be, as John Moore talks about, right next to or adjacent to, abutting with the reservoir that supplies 90% of the water to the five boroughs of New York City.
But, how handy.
How handy. But John talks about this all the time. Anyway, we've got the receipts.
Is there any updates on that what the jihadists are up to? It's been 20 years ago. 20 years.
Actually, wow, yeah, 20 years. 20 years this month. I think we were in the midst of, because we started, I think, in January. I've got to go back through my notes. I blocked a lot of that out because I'm just, but yeah, so today, I don't believe it's as active as it was. They moved their base of operations into a place in Virginia, GY. And then out of the 19 or so compounds that we identified. And by the way, another alternative media, they're the ones that, not that I care, but they're the ones that said, oh, we found it. And anyway, Dr. Paul Williams wrote a book that featured our investigation called Islamberg. And I don't even know if it's still in print, but Dr. Paul Williams, I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I hope he's doing well. If he's, but nonetheless, Islamberg is the name of the book, and it has our reports of what happened there. But anyway, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but boy, you got me thinking now, and I haven't thought about that in a while. Now I'm riled up. So John, save me.
Well, I've done hundreds of surveillance operations, detective agency I worked for, the largest one in Metro St. Louis. These two guys started guys, and they shut down Pinkertons when they started their own business. And two work stations was the former agent in charge of the FBI in St. Louis. The guy in between was a retired police homicide detective. And then my work station is right next to the owner of the company. So we're a pretty high profile detective agency. And I had a specialty of getting out in the woods with my camouflage and my cameras to get evidence to show the fraud that was taking place, the injury fraud that was taking place. And I was pretty good at that. And I would do whatever it took to get that video footage.
And John, I got to tell the people listening and watching this, John is one of the best of the best of the best, in my view. Knowing what I know about him from others who know him, if you got John on your backside, you got a lot of things to worry about. Okay, and I'd like to think the same about me, because once I get onto something, man, you know.
Well, that's what it takes to be a successful homicide detective. You can't give up. It literally, a murder case takes over your life, literally.
Oh, it does.
And it's if it taking over your life, you're not a good homicide detective, in my opinion. You're just there to get a paycheck. That's what it takes to be successful, and I'm glad I had that as a major in my life. I thought, what would I do if I got another homicide? Here's what I would do, Doug. I would graciously accept the assignment under the following conditions. I would be an officer. I would not in the day-to-day grunt work of following all the leads and looking for people that don't want to be found. Because I've done enough. Need to do that anymore. A young investigator, learn the ropes and learn what needs to be done, and be an advisor from a distance. That's what I would do, Doug.
Mm. Well, you know what you said, and I've noticed something since you and I have been together. You are perhaps one of the best researchers I know, and I cannot overstate how you approach different things, including, for example, you know, the slab jab, the COVID shot, the whole COVID investigation that you've done. You've taken it to proper levels. You've done proper investigation, but you've never let go. And that is so unique. I mean, not a lot. There are few investigators that are like that. And, you know, I'm not blowing smoke up your skirt. I'm just saying, you know, it's refreshing to have people like you and people like you on our side or working together. And that's what this country needs. We need that. Honest investigation, investigators with integrity, with character, experience, and with the ability like you've got. And I'd like to say, like I've got, I'd like to think.
Well, you do, Doug. Of course you do. Your track record proves it.
Well, you know, so the folks listening to this and viewing this, understand thelibertyman.com. That's his website. He has a 3-hour radio show every morning, you know, and he comes to us at night with great sacrifice. And I say that, and I'm not overstating it. You know, he's got a lot of stuff to do during the day. He does 3 hours in the morning, and then he drops everything at night. And when he should be sleeping, for crying out loud, and he comes on here. So let's all give John a hand and our studio.
Well, Doug, if it wasn't you, I wouldn't do it, Doug.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, typically I'm get my 9 p.m. and up at 3:45 a.m. Monday through Friday. I do sleep until about 6 a.m. on weekends.
the youngins don't quite get that, but okay.
Yeah, I told my webmaster. I said, you know, it was actually not just one.
Yeah. And I have to add this. Speaking of youngins, there's a milestone. A rite of passage, a milestone happening tomorrow, beginning at midnight tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Eric the Tech is turning the big 40 tomorrow. So let's all wish him a happy birthday early. Well, his birthday is tomorrow, and that would be
happy June birthday, Eric. 3rd.
There you go. had to mention that. So
it is? Tomorrow's my birthday?
Wait a minute. Isn't it? Or is it today?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. He's pulling your leg there a little bit. Yeah.
I do.
Well, it brings up something. My darling wife, she asked me something over the weekend. If you had 30 seconds to talk to yourself at age 18, what would you say?
Oh, I got to hear this. Yeah.
Well, I didn't take me long. I would say to myself at 18 years old, I would say, read 2 books, young man. Our Subconscious Mind and The Secret of the Ages by Robert Collier. That's what I would tell myself if I had 30 seconds to talk to myself at age 18. If I had read and understood and implemented the principles of those 2 books at age 18, my life would have been dramatically different than it was.
Interesting. So, okay.
Dr. Murphy was a Christian pastor. Robert Collier, who was a St. Louisan, by the way, divinity student. Murphy's book basically teaches you how something we've all done at some point in our life, maybe a focus on graduating from college, maybe a focus on getting a particular job, maybe a focus on winning the heart of a woman or a man to become your spouse, and our life after that. What Murphy's book does, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, it gives you specific instructions on how to meet and achieve any goal of your choosing with a very specific how to do it, how to give a structured plan to achieve any goal that you may have on your mind, whether it's convincing a woman to marry you or getting a job or solving a homicide. And I know, Doug, just like I have, you probably implemented these principles yourself without knowing exactly. It just became part of who we were to achieve certain goals. But having a specific structure and a plan to do it gives you an edge up on pretty much everybody else.
Hmm. Very interesting. Because the entire, I mean, that question, and but boy, you know, think about the gravity of that whole ability to go back and tell yourself 30 seconds, what would it now, be?
Going back 10, 12 years ago, there was a DVD, and it was featured on Oprah Winfrey's show. It's called, titled The Secret. It was huge for about a year or so. They mentioned a book. They never mentioned, if you knew the title of the book, you wouldn't have to buy what they had to sell. But I figured it out. The title was The Secret of the Ages, written by Robert Collier, about 1910 or so. And what he does in his book, which is considerably larger than Murphy's book, is give specific examples how the great men have implemented basically the same principles to achieve goals, The Secret of the Ages. And I highly recommend both books. I buy several copies of Murphy's book to give people in the late teens, early 20s, hopefully may have an impact, maybe not. I don't have any decision over what happens after I give them the book. But at least they have the opportunity to get the knowledge and to move forward there. So I don't want to dwell on this too much longer, but regardless of your age, as long as you're sucking air, there is hope that you may be able to improve yourself and run the book for men and women of all ages.
Well, thank you for that. And there's a lot of wisdom packed into that response and that topic. So, boy, I'd have to think long and hard about that. But I'll take your wisdom anytime. Again, John Moore, thelibertymen.com. That's his website. John, where to next in our conversation?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the implications of Mike Floyd talking about 300,000 Chinese in this country. I've watched videos of these guys standing in parade rest. It's been mentioned that they learned to do this when they're in school, but they look like military guys to me with their short hair. Stance. What our listeners can do to be safe. We have, if any ability at all, at the state level or the national level. At the county, I have some hope of making some change. I had a preparedness group I was the leader of in Viburnum, Missouri, where we met once a month. And we had a second meeting once a month at the chief of police and the fire chief, and we discussed preparedness for the community. Of Viburnum, Missouri is a town of 650 people, and I'll mention some things that anybody can do with limited. First of all, we bought and installed a commercial FM transmitter that at 25 watts was enough to cover the entire town plus several miles town, where we could if there was a ice storm emergency, a earthquake, a flood, the mayor, the chief of police, the fire chief, and the schools could talk to the entire town at once on a commercial scene. We set up the main location at the firehouse, which had backup power. The backup location in case there was a disaster at the firehouse was the police headquarters, which had backup power also. Our group bought and distributed to all the principals, the superintendent of schools, the mayor, the city council, pastor of all local churches, hand crank AM/FM radios, the hope being that we would have one person on every block in this little community that would have at least one hand crank radio that could pick up the signal. The alternative being two things: a 4x8 sheet of plywood in front of City Hall with messages, or Crown Vicks going street by street with the police giving an announcement. Neither one of which is really as effective as on FM radio. So we did that in Viburnum, Missouri. We did it in Davisville. We did it in Cuba, Missouri. I didn't help there, but they got the idea from me. And a FM radio in your community that can broadcast any message needs to be gotten could be a matter of life and death during a crisis.
I lost you there.
Anyway, moving on from there, our little group, we called the Viburnum Emergency Response Team. We had the FBI out to do training, where I pretended to be a victim in a schoolhouse and in a church, where the FBI was giving training to our local deputies on how to respond to an active shooter event. We had, for training once a year, we had CPR. We had training on how to give injections. We had once a class on wild edibles and that people could harvest and eat. Once a year, we had a map and compass course where people learned how to use. I've taught dozens of these clubs. And it was after my wife got sick, I became her primary caregiver. I turned over the group to another gentleman. He ran it for a year or so, and now the group is no longer exists. But for 10 years, we had monthly training for our little community to help them be prepared in the event of an emergency.
Wow. So what you're actually giving right now advice of what people can do.
Yeah. Now, on a commercial FM transmitter putting out 25 watts, they sell them all. You get the transmitter, antenna, the coax, the power supply. All you need is a microphone. Less than $300, you get the whole deal ready to go. That's something that any small group should be able to. Some bake sales or something to pay $300 to set up a radio that your community can use during a crisis.
Wow. Okay. And this is the kind of stuff I know when Steve comes on, we talk about satellite phones and bivy sticks and alternative methods of communication, but this is something simple. I mean, not simple. That the other isn't. But
like I was at a meeting, I used to go to the chief's meeting once a month, Crawford County. The fire chiefs, police chiefs, and the sheriff get together, the paramedic chiefs. And so one of these gentlemen, if you had to talk to everybody in your community at the same time because of an ice storm, a tornado, how would you do it? They were all silent.
Wow.
They didn't have any way. Cuba, Missouri, they still don't. These other communities have not implemented the FM transmitter in their communities. It's simple, it's effective, terribly expensive, and I believe every community, whether it's 50 or 1,000 or more, should have a proprietary FM transmitter to talk to the people in the community. When I say proprietary, not part of a commercial radio station, that you have no control over whether that thing's going to be operating or not.
And interesting.
And by the way, the FM transmitter is kept inside a Faraday box, so it can't be harmed by EMP.
And that's another important thing. Hey, a Faraday box, Faraday bag, available at Dark Bags. That's my go-to place. It's easy. I'm telling you. Or if you have an old microwave that is still has the proper seals on the door and such, that can act as a Faraday box as well. And but you know what? These are things that by listening to John Moore, his radio show, you can learn the defensive methods of defending yourself. I don't want to say on the cheap, but in a very practical
measure. Well, it's necessary on the cheap. I've never been a wealthy man. I'm not a wealthy man. I wanted to have enough food to feed my daughter and her family, which was two adults and three children, plus my wife. So I wanted to be able to feed seven for 2 years. I couldn't buy that food, so I bought bags of grain and properly stored them so that I could feed them. It's not fun food. It's not exciting food, but it'll keep you alive. Beans and rice and wheat and barley and so forth.
That's, you know, simple. Everyone can do it. And look, folks, let me turn this into a question. John, do you see some rough times in the offing here, in the meat eat offing here in the U.S.? So I know we've got listeners in Canada. We've got listeners in New Zealand, Australia, and hello to everyone. Karen in Italy, haven't spoken to you in a while, but, you know, so all over the world, I mean, these are things that people should be doing, but here in the U.S. or in North America, we'll say, you see some rough times coming, some, you know, pretty attacks or domestic, you know, things taking place that would cause you concern. Are you seeing that?
I see all the chess players being in place to have any number of disasters. Catherine Austin Fitz,
yeah,
she said her research team has determined the federal government of the United States has spent $21 trillion with a T, $21 trillion over the last several decades getting ready for an extinction-level event. Now, that's not John Moore. That's not Doug Hagman. That's not Alex Jones. That's the federal government of the United States spending incredible amounts of money. I mean, it's you could, you know, a pallet of $100 bills is 4 by 4 by 4 feet, and you could stadiums with pallets of $100 bills for $21 trillion. It's just the bottom of what the federal government's got. So I there's a lot of things about the federal government I don't trust or pay attention to, but when they spend that kind of money, I think it's time to coughing that. Our government takes these matters seriously. They're preparing for them seriously. I don't trust the engineering that's gone to 170 bases, both underground and under the ocean, connected by high-speed rail. I have friends that have access to them. They don't trust the engineering. I don't trust the engineering to resist 9-point-plus earthquakes. I really don't. So I'm preparing it own way with my own shelter, my own food, and my own proprietary source of electricity and water, and getting ready for what could happen. Level event is one thing. What the communist Chinese else, their goal is, or stated goal is, for the 21st century to be their century. It's one, and the Politburo of the communist Chinese has every intent taking over the lower 48 and having it become New China. And they'll be telling their peasant soldiers that are in the Chinese military, oh, well, we had Chinese explorers on the west coast of North America centuries ago before Columbus got there. Therefore, it's ours.
Yeah.
And they really do believe that. Just like Taiwan, which has never, ever been part of communist China, they claim it to be a rogue part of communist China, which, how can it reunite something that's never been united? How can it reunite something that's never been united in the first place? But they believe these bizarre thoughts, and they're going to so the answer to your question is yes. I live a life, I'm always ready for what happens, and if there's red Chinese coming down the highway, I will implement my plan, my wife and my family, and I also have fun. You know, it's not a life of dismal gloom. I had my Triumph out yesterday. I drove 130 miles in my Triumph TR6 with no windshield, and it was great fun. And I got a bumper sticker on the hood that says, "Windshields are for sissies." So you can see the photograph of my Triumph TR6 at my website. My wife wants to ride tomorrow, which so a life of preparedness doesn't have to be doom and gloom. It can be a normal life and a fun life also if you
an EMP proof vehicle, no less. Okay. And think about that with all of the technology that's, the computer parts in modern vehicles. You know, the old school is the best school in my view. My car.
We have a local dentist who has 12 mules. And I said, he's a doctor. I said, Doc, you're going to be the richest man in this county.
Yeah, there you go, man. Exactly. And so I think it was you. A lot of people say prepare. You know, how do you prepare? Prepare for like it's going to be the 1800s, basically, because that could very well take place. So with the, like you said, the mules and the old school stuff, that's what we need to go back to. By the way, I sent Eric the text something. I just happened to find this very quickly here. You know, we talk about preparation. There's an image there. People say, well, you know, what happened? That, after pressing a key fob in my vehicle,
it exploded when you pressed the key fob?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy, that's sophisticated. Yeah. That's, those guys weren't amateurs.
But the problem was, you know, it engulfed the, on both sides of the firewall. Okay. And then that's an early image taken of what happened. So as soon as we heard the woof, I was able to, back with a flip phone camera, I think it was, take that image. And that's what you get for asking questions, right? However, if John's talking about preparing, here's how they prepare. The next image is how they prepare. And folks, pay attention to this. This is one of the images we were able to salvage from this. This made its rounds from Fox 5 in New York City to books and websites everywhere. But this was on the grounds of that Islamic training compound. That's a school bus. And what you can't see there necessarily, or maybe right. You can, are bullet holes.
And, really?
Yeah. The windows... you might be able to see them, make it out a little bit. They're bullet holes. And they use that to train, or back then they were using that to train to take over a school bus, commandeer a school bus. We had multiple images, and trace evidence of explosives that we don't have anymore because again, back then the FBI just said, that's ours. You know, scrapings from the floorboards, from the seats. We snuck on there, which really, really hacked them off. Not the FBI, but the people that were using this as a training device.
Right.
So, folks, look, we, to underscore what John said, we've got the receipts. What John is saying, he does too. But the fact is, this, I don't want to scare anyone, but why should you prepare? That's a reason why you should prepare. Go ahead, John.
Absolutely. Well, why would you need to use weapons against children and an unarmed school bus driver? That's kind of baffles me why you would even need to fire weapons at all, unless they just wanted to kill people as opposed to take them hostage. Very bizarre mindset. Well, Muslims are very, very, very bizarre people to begin with. The religion of peace.
religion of pieces. But okay, I digress. Yeah.
Well, I emphasize people get skills. That's my group. We focus on getting skills. You know, that's why we had the classes we had. The two skills in the biggest demand and short supply in any group, whether a group of six or 600, is the following skills: first aid, CPR, and ham radio. Other skills you're going to find scattered throughout the community, those good skills. But those two skills will be the or supply. I emphasize people, if they're just getting started in preparedness or they've been at it for 20 years, to make sure they've got their ham radio license, make sure they got the most advanced first aid CPR class that they can get. Wilderness first aid would be a good thing as well, and have the equipment to go along with it. The skills without pretty useless. And locate, and we talk about this every Friday. We have a ham expert on my Friday show, the third hour every Friday, Mr. Tom Berryhill, who became a ham radio operator more than half a century ago. And we emphasize getting a ham radio license, getting the equipment, and joining a local ham radio club, or checking out the ARRL.org website, the American Relay League that's been around the century. You can locate your closest ham radio club or clubs at that website. You can get educational material, access to equipment, and so forth. But ham radio is a fun hobby, normal times, a hobby that 8-year-old boys and parents can both participate in equally on the same level. During an emergency, it's a matter of life and death. We've seen this most emergencies. Hurricane Katrina comes to mind. The police can't talk. The state police can't talk. The paramedics, the fire department. When all else fails, the ham radio guys and gals step up to the plate to provide emergency communications. That happens without fail every time. Satellite telephones can make up a difference, but they're not ubiquitous. We don't have satellite telephones everywhere.
I'm going to tell you, if a ham radio is good enough for Nellie or the wife of Bruce Orr, Department of Justice under numbnuts Biden and, you know, the Obama favorite, it's good enough for us, Nellie or Bruce Orr. But ham radio, and the Friday program, by the way, thelibertyman.com, that's where to go. From there, you can get all of the programming. But I'm going to tell you something. It's educational. It's informative. It's really good. What John's put together is a marvelous array of programming throughout the week. So go to thelibertyman.com. Make sure you listen, because it's a 3-hour download really every day that's required. I think it's required. There it is on screen, thelibertyman.com. And there you can also see a picture of his vehicle, sans windshield, because they're for sissies. And yeah, there we go. We're coming to it. If I remember right, well, it's down a little further, right?
Having my show working on Zoom to do that. We did a test run today. Tomorrow will be have my video where people can look at it on archives, not live, but on archives. So it's been a challenge. We've been using Skype at Art Republic Broadcasting for 20 years, and Skype went out of business. the thing that took its place, Teams, has been a nightmare. I'm dropping Teams. Zoom looks like the way to go. So I got everything set up, and hopefully we'll have beginning tomorrow, people can take a look at it, Doug.
I love it. And again, folks, one more time, thelibertyman.com. But from there, that's his home base. And from there, you can find it quite a bit. Fantastic, man. I'm telling you what, you're a man's man. As some people have said in the chat, from your service in the military to homicide to... not committing them, investigating them, although who knows. Again, I'm very thankful to have you. What else is on your mind? Because there is so much going on. It's hard to keep track. And you know what? Sometimes, folks, here's my suggestion. Sometimes you just have to say enough is enough. Take your shoes and socks off. Go walk in the grass. Take your dog with you, or your wife, or husband. I was going to make a joke there, but I won't.
That's okay.
And get back to the real world. Don't have your head stuck in a computer or a television all day long, and enjoy your life as you have it now. And really, after you get done repenting, which we all have to do. Praise God for the gift of life and what we have. Not a lot of people are doing that today. And I think, you know, get our heads out of the negative and get in the praise mode and say, thank God. Thank you, God, for what for the gracious gift you've given us. I think that's very important to do. But that's just.
I agree. It's if World War III doesn't get any worse, and I think the historians will say we're in World War III recently, but if it doesn't get any worse, President Trump's goal of having this become a new golden age, United States, economically, culturally, socially, I think very well may happen. And I'm prepared for World War III if it happens. On the other, I'm looking forward to a new golden age, economically, socially, in this country. I see all the things being put in place to get rid of the, and stop what I call the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims. Just one example, USAID being shut down is cutting off the funding that's been going to these groups for we don't know how many decades. George Soros is being marginalized, I think. What his efforts are being pushed to the side. We're now having corporates step up to the plate and hire people based on how good they are as opposed to the color of their skin. Universities will be acting on bringing in new students based on merit instead of the color of their skin. We have school districts all over the country and stop boys from playing in girls' sports. That's what it will be soon, I believe. Maine is a holdout. They'll find themselves in a world of hurt going against President Trump wanting to get the boys out of the girls' sports and when their funding stops. That tends to get people's attention when the money stops flowing, doesn't it, Doug?
When the money stops flowing, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. When you look at what's taking place or what has taken place with Elon Musk, the Doge team, the removal or the stopping money flowing, perfect example, Harvard. The people who bitch about that, about, hey, you know, you can't do that, or you know, getting rid of the Department of Education, which really is just a nexus, a funding mechanism for the indoctrination of children. It has nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with the funding mechanism behind the indoctrination process. So I guess what I'm saying to everyone is, and responding back to you is, just as we do in investigations, depending, of course, on the type, but 99%, you follow the money. And right. Once you follow the money, you right. can identify the people. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. I agree. It's not a factor in homicide investigations, but many of the time the money trail will lead to the result that they're looking for. Getting back to our listeners and what our listeners can be doing, and I mentioned pretty much every show that ultimately it's a spiritual battle. We need to keep that in mind as a foundational part of everything we do. It can't be ignored. It shouldn't be ignored. And remind people that preparing for the spiritual battle is a big part of what we do. I encourage people to find a local church where the preaches from the Bible, and where you would have mind conservative Christians that are patriots that want to do the right things for the right reasons. The church is that kind of church. It helps me stay grounded to attend that Sunday morning service, meet for an hour or so with the conservative Christian patriots in my neighborhood. Message from the pastor that's consistent with foundational Christian beliefs. And it's just a good way to start the week. And I encourage everybody to please consider doing that, Doug.
There's something about the churches are empty today. And folks, if you think about it, in the days and weeks after 9/11 here, you had churches filled with people. And it seems like we've abandoned that. We need to get back to that, not because of any event, but iron sharpens iron. You need to be around people of Christian values. You can do it on your own, certainly, but it's almost like a spiritual meal when you're around people of that caliber. So I'm a big proponent of that. John Moore is as well. And you know what? Have fellowship with like-minded people who are on the same page. If your church is celebrating, and this is my view, if they've got a homosexual flag outside, and you know, you've got some butch bishop or whatever talking about you know, there are multiple ways to heaven, then you're in the wrong place. Right. Okay, so anyway, yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, and there's plenty of that, by the way, going on.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, and we don't need to matter talk about it. I think most of our listeners know about that. Just avoid those kind of churches. And as I said a moment ago, a church where the pastor preaches from the Bible, which is affiliated by conservative Christian patriots, that's where you want to be. Otherwise, just let it go and move on from there. Anyway, Doug, as I said a moment ago, I'm hopeful that President Trump's goal to a new golden age in the United States it has legs. It's viable. It is certainly a possibility. He's already turning around. The president's only been in office, 4 months now?
And, 5 months. I mean, it's still early yet. Yes.
Yeah, it is. And the ship of state is like an aircraft carrier. You can't turn an aircraft shopping cart. It's a massive, massive job to turn a ship of state. The harmful things put in place by the third Obama administration, what Biden's administration was, the third Obama administration. The goal of Barack Hussein to destroy the United States. I've heard it said recently that his impetus for getting involved in politics initially was what's going on in South Africa, which was taken over by the communists more than 20 years ago. Barack communist. The Biden administration was the third Obama administration. And thank goodness we're able to stop it. Another 4 years of heels up Harris would have been very hard to overcome, if not impossible, wouldn't it, Doug?
You know, you're exactly right. There was a Liberty Daily has had a couple of interesting stories. I think they might still be up today or tonight as this broadcast is on. But what you said about heels up Harris, knee pads Harris, I'm going to tell you what we were and would be even in a deeper world of hurt had that cabal gain power. So we dodged a big bullet there, a mortar shell, actually. But the Independent Sentinel reported on the 181 rulings that have already taken place to stop President Trump, his agenda, and identified the person behind most of those rulings. Of course, they were talking about Norm Eisen in the Lawfare cases, Lawfare judges, you know, where all these cases coming from. And just follow the steps. By the way, Norm Eisen is a friend, a close personal friend of, you guessed it, Judge Roberts of the Supreme Court.
Really?
Gee, yeah. So, but when you look at that and trace it back, exactly what you said, it's the Obama contingent, the Obama cabal that still has never left. And you can toss Hillary Clinton into that and Bill Clinton into that as well. So you've got those Clinton people driving this. But one story, and maybe you've talked about this, I'm a little bit behind on my In fact, I did not catch your show today, which shame on me. I'll have to do that tomorrow. It's to kind of stack your programs back to back. But there's a story going around. Tell me about this, because you, some time ago, you had shown a map, a Navy map, I think it was, of
Right. It's on my website.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I thought of you when I saw this earlier today. Let me just see if it's there. It is there. Okay. Top national security officials around the world know we're living on borrowed time due to a major 2027 event. And it goes into an asteroid strike. The InfoWars had this. We're living on borrowed time, you know, an asteroid strike. Ross Coulter, I guess, claims that some type of some type of really bad thing's going to happen, okay, in 2027. And any thoughts on this? I mean, have you seen this? And any thoughts on is this?
Well, first of all, the government can keep secrets. And that's well documented. The example I use, of course, is the Manhattan Project. My father and grandfather were among the 250,000 men and women who worked on the project. They were plumbers. They didn't have a clue what they were doing down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So people ask me when I do these presentations, when's it going to come through? The Planet X, when's it going to come through our solar system? And I started jokingly saying 3 p.m. tomorrow. But here's the deal. The men and women who were at the classified briefings in the Navy, especially, it was mostly men in the submarine corps, they weren't given a hold in their life. And these briefings began in 1979 with flag rank officers in New Orleans. And the enlisted people started in 1985. And I think they may have discontinued them, but there was a number of years where the Navy submarines were all getting the class firing. And so these guys would retire from the Navy, typically 40 to 45 years old, a typical retiree, a young guy. They buy their 5 or 10 or 20 in the Ozarks. They start their new career, and they start their life of preparedness. A date is irrelevant when your day-to-day life of preparedness, a date becomes irrelevant, because you're doing everything you can with your time and your money to prepare for the consequences of a part coming through our solar system called Planet X. Mm. So I'm not going to one way or the other about 2027 as a possible date for this planet to come through our solar system. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's not going to change my life that much beforehand anyway. And if it happens, I'll deal with it, as will the thousands of men and women who have moved to the Ozarks and are prepared to deal with this, Doug. In fact, I found out recently that G. Edward Griffin's son moved to the Ozarks as a consequence of listening to me and watching my DVD.
I believe that. Yeah.
Oh, yes. With thousands of others. Many of which have listened to my work. Others have just listened to the classified briefing, like my friend Tim Spencer. He was in the submarine corps. He saw the map. He was told to move to the Ozarks when he retired. He wasn't even in the briefing, but he, as a consequence of being told to move to have a safety panel and be safe in the 1980s, which he did. And so that's my response as to the 2027 date. I'll look at it. I'll observe it, put it in the mix, but otherwise nothing's going to change for me, Doug.
Excuse me. Exactly. I don't think, I mean, people listening to this wanting, I think we're a lot alike. I can relate to just about anybody out there. At least I believe I can. I'm just a normal guy. But, you know, we're all trying to do the best we can do with what we have. Okay. And, so we have to, we can only do what we can do with the help of God, of course, with God's help and with our belief in God. But there are things I think that we can do to shore up some of our own personal defenses in the larger sense. And again, by listening to you, by listening to programs like this, by listening to people who know what they're talking about. But I think it's our responsibility to look after not just ourselves, but our offspring, our families. And I think that, that people who don't do that are either totally in denial or lazy or both maybe, you know? So, folks, that's just, I'm just sharing what I feel. I don't know. Again, I'm just a normal guy. I got, you know, I'm just a moron walking around, you know, just trying to do the best I know how to do. But you're right. I mean, John, you're right about these things. So anyway,
I'd rather be wrong, but,
yeah, exactly.
But I have no choice but to accept the evidence as it's been presented to me. You know, Doc, you and I have spent most of our adult life in the world of evidence, yes, as opposed to speculation. I'm always getting in trouble with my wife when she presents something. I say, "Well, honey, there's no evidence to back that up. It's a speculation. Absence of evidence, it's just speculation." And I've dealt with this with attorneys and other investigators for decades.
Yes.
Where they want to follow speculation as opposed to following the evidence. It can be maddening, quite frankly.
But you know what?
Young lawyers are the worst, by the way.
Believe me. Oh, yeah. And you know what? The green FBI agents way back when they, you know, they were graduating accountants out of the academy and, you know, and never a day in the field, right? So clueless. But you know what? You follow your gut, and a lot of people look. I'm a big believer in that. You might not have all of the facts, and that's okay. But you follow your gut, your
right.
instincts.
That's and right.
To me, that's the artistic part of the science of investigations. So while we deal in evidence, you have the God-given instinct, perhaps led by the Holy Spirit.
I was kind of involved in the esoteric part of this, Doug.
Yeah, right. But you know, and to me, that's what makes you a top-notch investigator. So, but yeah, you know, you deal in evidence. There's no evidence of that, this or that. That's the thing, the old cop shows. You know, you never work from a conclusion. You work with the facts to a conclusion. So, I think a lot of people have lost that. And to your point about the injections and people looking at a blank, you know, 2 by 2 foot piece of paper, you know, we've lost, I think the population has lost that ability, that reasoning, that, where has the comprehension gone or the reasoning gone? You know,
well,
go ahead.
A young man, he was the headmaster of a private Christian school. And he says, "John, a lot of our time attempting, the operative word being attempting, to teach critical thinking skills." And that's what's been lost, is critical thinking skills, unfortunately. And I'm not sure how you would teach it. I assume there are different modalities. Youngsters' critical thinking skills. That's what we're lacking in much of our society, isn't it, Doug?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think, can that be taught? I mean, can you, and I'm asking this sincerely, you know, we've all gone to classes and courses, investigative courses, but can critical thinking skills be taught to adults? And I'm honest question to you.
Well, like I said, I'm not aware of what modalities would be successful. I've known attempting to convince people of certain things that sometimes it's a movie, sometimes it's a personal private counsel conversation that, everybody's different in terms of what it takes to convince them of the reality of whatever matter it might be. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. And the same thing may apply to critical thinking skills. There's probably exercises that, you know, maybe a book a person could read, assuming they read it all, which half the adults in this country are either illiterate or semi-literate, which is a massive problem. We don't have time to.
It amazes me. And like you, boy, I'll tell you what, like you have said, you know, our attention collectively now with the Western population, our attention spans have gone down to just about nothing. And I would say that social media, the internet and such, that's part of the problem. Or that's one of the reasons why, you know, the character limitation that used to be on Twitter, X now, whatever, and the TLDR, that drives me absolutely bat crap crazy. Too long didn't read, in reference to a post that's about, you know, 50 words, right? Why? Well, what the hell? What's wrong with you? You know, and people are in the schools grinding out graduates that can't even read, have no functional literacy, like you mentioned. We have a big problem here. We really do,
because an illiterate person would be dangerous at an entry-level janitor's position. Yeah. The chemicals used by professional janitors can just hurt somebody else if you read the warning labels and warning books that come with them. So, you know, when with 10 minutes to talk about these matters, it's hard to go into much detail. But I regard literacy as a major issue with our country, and that needs to be corrected. And I'm not sure what work's been done on it. So far, it hasn't been. But we need a literate adult population to move forward in the way we should be moving forward, right, Doug?
We do. And, you know, what suggestion do you have in this? I was thinking about this today. In fact, I was actually talking to my wife about this today, this morning, or early afternoon, I should say. We were talking about the not necessarily our children, but their children. Now, some are behind the curve in terms of literacy, of writing, reading, writing, and stuff like that. What would you say that we as grandparents can do or should do to assist, you know, because you can't depend on schools. And the whole issue arose when we were talking about a school. Okay, you know, what school would be appropriate for a certain child? Okay, so we were talking about that, and then it went to, okay, what are the goals of the educational process? Well, you know, reading. Writing, I mean, the basics, reading, being literate, being able to write in cursive, read cursive. The Constitution, as you've many times pointed out, written in cursive. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts, anything that you would tell grandparents that they could do, be an influence over their grandchildren or even younger people listening to this, their children themselves? I mean, do you have any advice?
Well, it'll come down to, if the public schools are very few people do a good job of teaching mathematics and reading, the phonics needs to begin at kindergarten, if not earlier. Mathematics needs to begin at kindergarten or if the local public school isn't doing that in terms of phonics at beginning of kindergarten, the grant. Sure that the parents have access to a phonics program to help these children learn the English language. In the absence of phonics, they're going to be limited to sight reading, which is condemns them to a life where reading is not a fun or enjoyable thing, which is very tragic. You know, mathematics, once again, needs to begin at the kindergarten level and move forward to at least algebra before they graduate from high school. So they got.
Yeah.
The foundation of all education is mathematics and language. In the absence of those two things, you can't possibly become a well-educated, well-rounded person.
And we see, don't we see this today? I'm not sure. On X, to be certain, you see videos, short videos, maybe from some other platform, TikTok or whatever. But you see people talking today. And sometimes when I listen to these people talk, whether they're black, whether they're white, whether it doesn't matter, but nonetheless, they're talking their English. But man, you can barely understand what they're saying, because I mean, it's difficult to understand. They've got this inadequate communication skills. They don't use words or pronounce words correctly. And I'm not talking about hard words. I'm talking about just normal conversational stuff. So anyway, you're right on that. In terms of math, my goodness, how many times have we all seen people of all ages unable to give change back?
That's right.
Or just general knowledge. People on the street interviews. How many states are there? What's the capital of the U.S.? You know, who did we fight independence for? No one can answer, or a lot of people cannot answer these questions. We have a major problem. And again, it's going to be up to us to get back in line. So get that next next generation back in line. Oh, man, I'll tell you what, a lot of stuff we covered, a lot of ground we covered. I know we got about 3 minutes left. Folks, I just want to say, if you haven't done so already, go to and bookmark thelibertyman.com. It'll be in our show notes, thelibertyman.com. Of course, listen to the John Moore Show every weekday. It's right there at thelibertyman.com. It'll be in the show notes at HagmanPI.com, two ends on Hagman. And please support John and all of his work, all that he does. The headlines on his webpage are important to this. The articles are important to read. The information will enrich you and inform you. John, 2 minutes, I believe, roughly 2 minutes or so. Your ending, closing thoughts, anywhere you want to take us?
Well, going back to something earlier, ultimately it's a spiritual battle. We need to pray with that. We need to remember the foundation of our Christian beliefs, that our Christian beliefs are true and sacred and should never, ever be questioned or with. The difference between much of the world and the United States is a firm foundation in Christianity. And if we can get back to a larger part of our country and foundation beliefs in Christianity, I believe we will be better off and a lot closer to maintaining our republic. So I encourage everybody to do that, Doug. Be a student of the Bible. Look at our Christian beliefs as something that needs to be a daily part of our lives, Doug.
Man, and that's really what it's all about. By the way, I looked at the program clock, and we still have about a couple of minutes left. But you know, that's really what this is all about. No matter what happens, no matter what's happening out there, how are you going to make an impact on what's going on in Ukraine or whatever? You need to be informed about it, but what are you going to do about it? The only thing you can do is what you can do. And that is, of course, like you said, John, understanding this is a spiritual war. We all have to have that basic understanding. If you don't, then you're already behind the eight ball. You already don't know what's going on. So understand this is a spiritual war that's taking place in the heavenlies, playing out here on earth. Get right with God. What do I mean by that? Well, Pastor Lankford certainly can give you the education on that. But the bottom line is, make sure you are proper, correct with God, follow his laws, and understand that his will be done, not your whims. And, just repent and pray. That's it. But then again, be right with